What's up, my friend? Welcome to the Finding Direction podcast. My name is Stu Massengill, and I'm here every single week to bring you a passionate guest or message dedicated to helping you find your purpose so that you can live a life full of passion, fulfillment, and happiness. From the bottom of my heart, thank you for hanging out with me, and let's dive in. What's up, my friend? I hope you are having a beautiful day, and welcome back to the show this week. This week, I'm sitting down with Ritu Basine, and a little bit about Ritu. She is the CEO of Basine Consulting. She is an award-winning speaker, a best-selling author, and she's an expert in diversity, equity, and inclusion, who knows firsthand that the path to belonging is both beautiful but also very hard. As a child of working class immigrants of color, she experienced relentless struggles with racism, bullying, and cultural confusion growing up. And even as a successful lawyer and business leader, Ritu grappled with knowing, embracing, and being her authentic self until she realized that the freedom that you can have when you finally claim your belonging. So on this episode, what we dive into is how can you begin to step into your authentic self, how you can start to discover if you're actually performing in your life, not being authentic. And we also look at the lessons that Ritu learned spending 2 weeks in a forest with a group of strangers. All right, you are going to get quite a bit from this episode. It is such a beautiful one. If you're looking to live more authentically in your life, this is one of the episodes you need to dial in, and I would even encourage you to grab a pen, a notepad, so you can really get stuff from this week's episode. So without further ado, make sure you subscribe to the episode if you're not joining us already, and here we go, my friend. Ritu Basine, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being here with us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Stu.
Absolutely. And so as we dive into our conversation today and sort of navigate through the ups, the downs, all the fun stuff, which is your life, I would love it if you could give us sort of a 10,000 foot plain view of your journey that kind of landed you at the destination where you're at today.
Oh, 10,000 foot view. It's like whenever people ask me, like, so tell me about yourself. I'm like, before I tell you about me, I have to tell you about my ancestors because, you know, their blood runs through my veins and I need to start right at the beginning of time. So I am the proud daughter of Indian immigrant parents, in that my parents immigrated from India to Canada. I'm Canadian. You're going to hear the Canadianisms in me. Like I'm literally sitting in Toronto, staring at the CN Tower. So when Drake says views from the six, I'm staring at the tower he's referring to. I stared at it all day long from my office in my home. And I'm the proud daughter of Indian immigrant parents. But it took me decades to be able to say that I was proud to be the child of immigrants. And a lot of that tied back to my relentless experiences with childhood bullying and racist childhood bullying in particular. So I'm a survivor of years of bullying, harassment that had a profoundly adverse impact on my soul and my spirit as a child. And I carried that childhood trauma into my adulthood. And I grappled with it both personally and professionally, my identity, who I am, my lack of worthiness, my lack of self-esteem, and so much more for years and years until I finally committed to, nah, man, this is not how my life is going down. I am not going to go down like this, and transforming how I live. So how's that for 10,000 feet?
I love it. That's beautiful. Let me ask you this. What would you say? Because, I mean, so much of your life and the work that you do today, and we'll get to that, is shaped by the experiences you had when you were younger, right? And making sure that you make a difference now based on the things that you experienced in your life and making the world a better place through the lessons that you thankfully pulled from that, right? Many people didn't pull lessons from those things. They hold on to it and it doesn't serve them in their life. And one thing I would be curious for you is like, what would you say is one of the biggest lies that you believed because of some of those experiences that you had growing up? I know you said it took decades to say, I'm the proud daughter of immigrant parents. So somewhere in there, it seems like there had to have been a lie that you were believing that made you not proud. And I'm curious, you know, maybe our listener can pull something from that if you'd be open to sharing.
Oh, I mean, there were so many lies that I told myself or that I believed, because as a woman, as a woman of color, as a woman of color with immigrant parents from a religious minority group. And so I am a Sikh. And when I say Sikh, my faith is called Sikhism or Sikhi. Oftentimes in the US and Canada, we hear it pronounced as Sikh and Sikhism. Mm. We're trying to decolonize language, Stu. I'm sure you're all about decolonizing language and say things properly. So it's actually, I am a Sikh. And my faith is called Sikhism or Sikhi. My father wears a turban, has a beard, the full deal. And for those of you who are listening, can't see me, like I have long hair. And my faith, we're supposed to not cut our hair, leave it unshorn so that we're visible and we stand out and we look like Sikhs. So there were so many lies that I believed as it related to being a smart young girl, as someone who did not grow up with a lot of class privilege, as a brown person from a Sikh background, like you put all that together, there were so many messages. But here's one of the biggest lies I believed, that I was told and that I believed growing up, that I now deeply know through my work and research, is that it is a lie. I believed that if I revealed how fucked up I felt, how insecure I truly was in my core, how flawed and broken and ashamed I was about who I am, that people would take their love and affection away. They wouldn't like me. They wouldn't accept me. They wouldn't want to work with me. They wouldn't want to date me, be my friend, all of that. And instead, I bought into the myth that I should put out a really perfect persona or a curated image of how amazing my life is. And by the way, this was before social media, okay? And so it's like, if I'm curated and I look so perfect and I act so perfect and I dress perfect and I speak perfect and I just achieve, and like I'm like perfect and positive and achievement oriented. And in fact, in my new book called We've Got This, I call it my PPA armor, my positivity perfection armor. If I'm just happy and shiny all the time, and if I'm perfect in everything I do and I'm achieving, I'm winning awards and getting job promotions and just like, you know, just winning, people will think that I'm lovable. And so I put out this curated self. And in fact, I call it my performing self. And when I say performing, I don't mean like high performance. I mean like life is a stage and we become actors on the stage, putting out like this curated image of who we are. So I'd walk around with my performing self mask and my armor, my PPA armor, and people would like me more. And I now know that to be completely false, because what I've learned over time is that when I actually openly, courageously talk about my shame and my pain and my insecurities, and I'm vulnerable and I am who I really am, which is this fun, loving, passionate, but person who's hurting and struggling and navigating this really difficult world at times, that people actually like me more and they want to work with me and they want to talk to me and they want to follow me online. Not that that matters, but it kind of does. This really plastic hashtag world, as my friend Sonia Jazz calls it. And like, it's, I feel like it just makes me more human, but I didn't know that. So I bought that lie and it hurt me in the end. But now that I'm hip to it, I'm like, never again. Here she is, the good, bad, and ugly of Ritu Basin.
I love it. And so, you know, if my research is correct, part of living that life where you were have your PPA and you're putting on this mask of performing, it took you through law school, right? And you went and took that path. And if we kind of skip a few steps in your story, eventually it took you to a yoga retreat. Like really changed your life, if I have this correct. And I was wondering if you could fill us in a little bit on like what light bulbs went off on this yoga retreat that allowed you to say, you know what, I'm not going to be the performing self anymore. I'm going to start to be authentically Ritu, and I'm going to be me. I'm going to like own who every aspect of who I am. Like, what was the light bulb that went off in that moment for you?
So, you know, it's so, I love that you asked this question, because I have been thinking a lot about my experience in the South Indian ashram that I found myself in now almost 15 years ago for, I was 15 years ago, 15 years ago, for a teacher training program. So it was the first time I completed a yoga teacher training program. I've done a few since. And I was in my early 30s. And I had, on paper, I had achieved the corporate dream. And from all accounts looking outwards in, you would have said, like, wow, she really seems like she has it going on. But you also might have picked up at that time, wow, she seems really curated. And you can't get her to, like, take the, like, just relax and exhale. And, like she just never really shares openly her pain or hurt. Because I was, remember, putting out that curated image.
Yeah, it was,
but,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it was like your performance self. Like you're on the stage performing. Everything has to be perfect. You don't make a mistake.
Exactly.
And that's why it's a performance.
And I'm in this like really high conforming profession. Like I chose, I knew that I wanted from a young age to do some type of social justice like work or like basically help people who didn't have a voice to find their voice, which was my childhood experience.
Right.
So then I decided to become a lawyer because I was like, oh, I'll do like human rights or like something social justice oriented. But in my 20s, I got swept up like when I was in law school into the corporate towers, the tide towards the corporate towers, because that's where all the cool kids were going. And frankly, that's where all the money was. And I was like, I'm a child of immigrants and I'm gonna make more money than my parents ever would have envisaged making at my age combined. And I'm gonna be a baller and this is gonna be so great, except that I hated every second of it. And not initially, but what I really deeply settled in, what I realized is that the performing, the PPA armor, the masking, it was so entrenched in the corporate world and in the legal profession in particular, that while on paper, I was like outwardly really successful at a young age, I was doing well, getting paid shit tons. I dressed the part. I was like out all the time. Like I was on the scene. Like it really looked great, but my heart just was struggling. Like I didn't know who I was. I was so used to performing and curating. I was lost. I didn't know who I was anymore. I felt spiritually vacant. And as a woman of color in a really white male oriented profession, I just felt alone. And I was like, F this, like I can't. And so here's what really happened. I was miserable, spiritually and mentally, but I was ignoring my body's signals to me of how stressed I was. So the bad sleeps and the clenching my teeth at night till I cracked a tooth, my hair stopped growing. Like those signals, my stomach was always a mess. I didn't like know, I was ignoring all of that. It was when the back pain started, the lower back pain that was severe, that I had to do something about it because I was in so much pain. And my chiro and a few people said, you know, you should do yoga because you need to strengthen your core. Ha ha. And actually you need to learn how to calm the F down and yoga will be good for you. And I was like, well, you know, my people invented it thousands of years ago and all these white people are doing it and maybe I should do it because it's in my blood and like, you know, I should give it a whirl and how hard can it be and whatever. And so then I go and try it and I'm like, what's all the hype? And then I did it again and again. And I was also like, how are all these white people doing it better than I am? It's supposed to be inherent to me because again, my people invented it 8,000 years plus ago. Anyways, even though it's been culturally appropriated. Okay. So then I'm like, so I'm doing the yoga thing and then I fell in love with it. And as I started to do it more and more, yes, the back pain went away, but more importantly, I was like, oh, wow. It gave me an opportunity not only to explore my body and my mind, but my soul and spirit. So I was hungry for more of it. And then slowly, I realized what I actually need to do is take a sabbatical from my job in the corporate towers, which is what I did. And I went to India to do my yoga teacher's training I was there for 2 months in the South in an ashram where I meditated all day long. And in my new book, I've been writing about this experience. I wrote a lot about this experience and I've been thinking a lot about it, how it basically transformed my life because it was the very first time in my adult life, I was removed from my actual real life and I was plunked literally into a forest somewhere with people I didn't know. And it was like, I heard the voices in my head of, who are you gonna be? Like, what side of them are you going to show them?
Oh.
And I was so confused and tormented about not knowing who to be while there. Dang. That it actually forced me to start to shed the personas and do the deep, heavy work of going in to get to know who I really am and then work on revealing it. And that's why, for me, going back to my motherland, Mother India, my roots, my ancestral roots, and spending time with that, with myself, was so transformative because it forced me to start to shed the personas.
That is such an interesting, truth, right? That you go into this place where you know nobody in the middle of nowhere, and it's like, who do I show up as? Do I show up as my authentic self, my performing self? What an interesting and beautiful experience.
What's up, my friend? I wanted to jump in here real quick and share with you something that has been a huge game changer in my life lately. If you know me, you know that I'm someone who's always looking for the next thing that helps me get just dialed in, focused, be massively productive, and really just get in this state that I like to call a flow, where your brain's talking to the right parts, things are connecting, and you are in just really this beautiful flow throughout your day. And recently, I came across a company that has been helping me with this in a huge way, so that I don't go through the day and have confusion. I'm not going through the day and, you know, doing the little squirrel thing where I know what I'm supposed to do, but I'm squirreling to something else, or just being distracted and not dialed in really. And the company, it's called Magic Mind. I was introduced to it through a good friend of mine. And now I want to introduce it to you, a good friend of mine. And really what Magic Mind helped me do, it's this little 4-ounce like elixir shot that you take in the morning. You can take it with your coffee. That's personally what I do. And what it does is it helps you start to get in that state of flow. Literally, that's exactly what it does. A few of the ingredients that I'll share specifically that actually are like the process behind what it's doing is, one of the big ones that it has in it is matcha. And matcha, really what it does is it contains much, much, much less caffeine than coffee. But what it does is, interestingly enough, and I just learned this recently, it has a compound in it called catechins that basically extend the benefit of caffeine by slowing your body's ability to absorb it. So essentially what matcha is in a nutshell is, it's like nature's extended release version of caffeine. And on top of that, it has something called Bacopa manieri, if I'm saying that correctly. And what that is it's a nootropic that improves your attention span, your ability to process and learn new information in your memory. So long story, all of those different things that I said, really, it just helps you get into a state of flow, be more productive, be more focused, and really just dial in for your day. And so because this has had an impact on my life, I asked the company if they would do something special for our listener. And honestly, they're going to do something just super, super cool, which is, if you have an interest in, you know, learning about Magic Mind, you want to be more productive, you want to be more focused, you want to be more dialed in, and you want to find that state of flow for your own life, they're gonna basically hook you up for listening to the show and give you 56%. Yes, I said that correctly, 56% off of your first subscription order. And if you just want to do a one-time order, they'll give you 20% off. You can do either way, whatever works best for you. And all you need to do is, if you go to magicmind.co, so not com, but .co/direction, and you enter the code direction20 at checkout, you will get both of those discounts. Again, the website is magicmind.co/direction, and just enter the code direction20 at checkout and you'll get 20% off your first time order or 56% off your first subscription order. And truly, from my heart to yours, my friend, I really do believe this will help you in life. I hope you believe it'll find direction, get clarity, and live in that state of flow, which honestly, life is so much better and so much more fun when you're living in a state of flow. So go check that out. Go dive into the link. Go check the product out. Use the discount and let me know how you like it, my friend. Back to the show.
And I'm curious, like, let's say for our listener who goes, you know, Rithu, I would love to go for 2 months into a forest and be with strangers and feel my layers back. But I can't really go skate for 2 months, but I would still love to peel some of the layers back and become my authentic self, you know, and through the work you've done, I mean, and through many conversations I've had with people on this show and just in life, I think it is true that when we're authentically ourselves, life is so much better. And so I'd be curious to hear from you, like, if somebody doesn't have 2 months to go have a similar experience, what are some of the things they can do to just be more of their authentic self?
Yeah, it's such an important question. And I would say, and I love what you're raising here, which is that not everyone has the privilege or the luxury to be like, okay, like, deuces, see ya, I'm off for a few months and I'm going to go be in an ashram somewhere. And my first book that I wrote called The Authenticity Principle, which is all about how do you live a more authentic life. I really dig deep into how step number one is getting to know who we are. But the problem is for so many of us, if I were to say to you, who is your authentic self?
Yeah.
Like, you're not going to be able to reveal your authentic self until you actually know who that is.
Right.
But for a lot of us, we don't even know who we are because we've become so used to curating and masking. And we do this largely because of a fear of judgment. It's the, you're going to judge me for who I am. You're going to take your love and affection away. You won't hire me. You won't date me. You won't love me. You won't play with me. And so I'll put this curated mask on. So there's a few things I would suggest that we do. And I talk a lot about this online on my empowerment site and on Instagram, et cetera. Yeah. So you can check out to go deeper. But the first few things we need to do is actually sit down with ourselves, have quiet reflection time. And Stu, I'm sure you have heard this a zillion times. And listeners, I'm sure you've heard Stu's guests say this a zillion times. So if a zillion of us are saying this, it must work. But it begs the question, why, even though we hear a zillion people telling us to do this, we don't? Fine. But that's something, even the making time to do this inner work, reflection, you're not going to sit down. Okay. Do it in the shower. Do it while you're driving. Right. Do it on the subway. Like, just walk down the street. Just do it somewhere. Start to think about what's important to you. And so, like, here what I'm talking about is like doing a deep dive into your values. Like, what do you believe in?
Yeah.
What's important to you? If I said, tell me 5 things that are important to you, what would those 5 things be? If I said to you, what are the 5 attributes, skills, strengths, things about you that you possess that are make you amazing, what would you say? And by the way, if you're like, if you are in a place where you're like, I hate myself and there aren't 5 things, then let me ask you this. What would someone who loves you deeply, if I was talking to that person, what are the 5 things they'd say about you that sets you apart? And so if you could wave your magic wand and be doing anything in the world, what would you be doing? Or some of my, how about these questions? Now I'm getting excited, Stu. Here we go. Let's go. If you could dress the way, if there were, so in my book, The Authenticity Principle, I define our authentic self as the following. If there were no negative consequences for your actions, for your behaviors, this is how you would speak. So if I said to you, how would you speak? No negative consequences. What would that look like? How would your voice actually sound? What would you say? Who would you say it to? What would you wear? What would you do with your hair? What work would you be doing? Who would you love? Where would you live? And like, we literally go through all of these questions and we start taking stock of this. And then we say to ourselves, that's step one. Like, we're doing a deep dive into what am I about? Second thing we ask ourselves is, what am I afraid of? Like, what do I fear? What triggers me to push down my authentic self? And I can tell you, for me, it went all the way back to my childhood shit, right? Like, my bullying about don't be brown, embody more whiteness, act like you grew up fancy, even though you were like, you know, working class immigrant parents. Don't be smart as a girl. Like, don't hide your sexuality, like whatever it was. And we start landing on like, what are the triggers that are pushing me to perform? Like, be out there performing self with the mask and the armor. Why is that happening? And then the third thing we do is we say this. What's one small thing about myself? And I listen to you speak, Rithu. I'm doing these exercises. You're talking about, what's one small thing about myself that I've not been sharing because of a fear of judgment that I'm going to courageously commit to revealing after today. And you know, like there's a lot of behavioral psychology that speaks to how most of us, when we make shifts and changes in life, they're not massive. Like we don't go 0 to 60 in 2 seconds. Some people do, but that's not most of us.
Right.
They're micro behavioral shifts. So it's small things. Like for example, many years ago, when I quit my job in the towers and started my own business as a consultant, speaker, expert in the DI space, I really wanted to get my nose pierced. I've wanted my nose to be pierced forever because in Indian culture, as brown girls, we do this.
Yeah.
And I finally was like, okay, now I'm out of the corporate world and no one's going to judge me. And now I can go and get myself a nose ring. Yeah. And I had this, so I did it. That was step one. Woo, exciting.
Yeah. Let's go.
Then I had a little tiny stud, okay? And it was a big thing. And I was like, I'm meeting with CEOs in my consulting work. And oh my goodness, what are they gonna think with my stud? And now I have a pretty fat hoop on. Some of you can't see. It's still tiny. Yeah. I want to walk around with a cowbell in my nose. Like that's the hope and the goal. Yeah. Like I want to be like blinged out everywhere. And it's more out of practicality that I don't. But it's like, I thought it was a big deal to wear a little tiny stud. And it's like amazing how our mind shifts. I don't give a shit. If a CEO looks at me now and is like, wow, her nose ring is too big for us to like work with her. That's your problem. And then you really shouldn't work with me actually.
Yeah.
But it just shows you how like these little micro shifts in how we behave help us to be more of our authentic self. So Stu, that was a long answer, but I had to share it.
Yeah. No, I love it. And
is it resonating?
And it's such a good question. The first one I love, especially that you say, if there was no negative consequences, how would you X, Y, Z? What would you do? What would you... you know, where it's like, it really does sort of peel this fear of judgment away to go, well, if there's no negative consequences, this is what I would do. And it does get you closer to that authentic self. One thing I'd be curious is, how does someone know if they are like living in their performing self? Like, are there signs, are there things people can, you know, that show up in people's life if they're performing? Because I think one thing that's so interesting is if you're trying to be authentic and you're trying to perform and you're trying to figure out who you are, you're also like, there's so many different things, right? It's like, well, I think this is me performing and I think this is me authentic. It's like, you need to sort of peel everything back to really understand what's what, right? And so,
yes.
Are there any like signs or anything, you know, our listener can take to say like, am I performing?
Yeah, I love this. I love, love, love this. Okay, so in my new book, I spend a lot of time. It's called We've Got This, Unlocking the Beauty of Belonging. And like Stu, as you know, we're talking all about belonging today. And actually, I would say like your whole mission and the work that you do and with this show for me really is about how do you help people to unlock a life of belonging, like land on their purpose and their meaning and be who they are. Like for me, that is what belonging is about. And as you can see, I'm a fierce advocate for it because for decades I didn't belong and I felt like I didn't belong. And by the way, healing is a journey. I still in moments feel like I don't belong often and I'm still doing my life's work of healing around that, but it's better than it was before, which shows you that we can improve and grow in how we feel about ourselves. So in We've Got This, I spend a lot of time talking about how our bodies are constantly talking to us and you can use your body as a guidepost to tell you about whether you are feeling safe to be authentic in a moment or whether you're into the performing self. Because when we are in a place where we feel judged and we feel activated by how people are treating us, our bodies will tell us. The problem is that as human beings, we are animals, but as animals, we have a very sophisticated prefrontal cortex, the part of our brain puts us in a place where we can override our bodies and like and be more analytical and be like, use our mind over the body signal. But if you were to take a moment and try to quiet the noise and just go within your body, all answers are within. Like your body will tell you what's what. Your body will tell you whether or not you actually trust someone enough to date them or work with them or befriend them or whatever. Your body will tell you whether you actually want to say yes to your parents or you want to draw a boundary. Or your body will tell you whether you're enjoying your experience at work or not. Like your body is going to tell you everything.
Right.
And so if you start to use your body as a guidepost, what you'll realize is that when we feel the pressure to perform because we feel like we're being judged, something in our body will say, this doesn't feel good. And so for me, I know I'm being pushed. I feel like the performing self is being having to show up because of a fear of judgment. When my stomach starts to churn a bit, I feel heaviness in my chest. I'll start to get sweaty. My cheeks will start to flush. I also notice like my voice changes immediately. Like when my voice starts to get really pitchy and I start talking like this, I'm like, okay, I'm activated. Like something's off here.
Interesting.
Because my voice is not how I would normally speak. And so we want to start to rely on our bodies as like as a compass.
Yeah.
For how am I feeling in this moment? Am I performing? Am I being authentic? Your body will tell you.
I love it. Yeah. And I definitely have noticed that in my life, for sure. It's like your body, it really is so interesting how we can ignore signals from our body so much. But it's like if you look back on your life as well, you go, man, that time, like whenever I went to do that thing, my energy was always drained. Like my body, my weight just felt heavy, right? It's like, if you look back on it, sometimes it's easier. But as you go forward, if you're more aware of it, I think that's when you can start to understand the signals. So
love that.
And so obviously in your last book, at least, you talk about the three selves. And so I just want to bring up real quick, at least the third one, which was the adapted self. And I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about, like, what is the adapted self? What does that look like?
Yes. So essentially, I created a framework called the three selves to help people live more authentically so that they can experience greater belonging. Because what I was finding is that in whether it's our boss at work or our partner or spouse, someone we're dating, or a friend, or an elder, like a family member, like a parent, or even like our siblings, that in these dynamics, in one breath, it's like, no, of course I want you to be who you are. Like, be authentic, be yourself. And then in the very next breath, it's like, just kidding. How dare you? That's too much authenticity. Like, actually, you should conform to my expectations around how you should behave. And then it's like, it's so confusing. And how the F should I show up? And especially in the workplace, I found. And so I was like, how do I help people navigate these experiences that are entrenched in conformity and really stand in their power and be who they are? And that's what led me to develop the three selves. There are three selves. On one end of the continuum is your authentic self. There are no negative consequences, like we talked about. This is how you'd show up. It's in the zone of empowerment. It feels the best to do. And this is where we want to spend most of our time. On the other side of the continuum is the performing self. We've talked a lot about the performing self. You feel pressure to change who you are. It feels like shit. It strikes at your authenticity. It feels exhausting, humiliating. Like, we want to push out of that as much as possible. But we can't be authentic 100% of the time because we want to keep our jobs and not go to jail and keep our spouses not get voted off the island. And so, because as humans, as animals, we're communal, we're tribal, we like to live in communities, we need mechanisms of social control to keep us regulated. So in the middle of the two selves lives what I call the adapted self. Your adapted self is a self that says, okay, I hear you, Ritu, gonna push out of performing because it doesn't serve me and it hurts. I can't be authentic 100% of the time, which makes sense. So the adapted self is a self where we willingly, happily choose to adjust our behaviors to meet our needs and the needs of others. So it's a choice. We do it willingly. Yeah. It serves us. It serves us and it serves others. So it still feels good to do. Still a manifestation of our authenticity. There's benefits of it. We're doing it by choice. And so it's still in the zone of empowerment. And when you take a step back and think about it, a lot of us are spending a lot of time adapting our behaviors all day long. And so, for example, I'm sure you've already picked up, I cuss like a pirate when I'm doing podcasts, and I'm a professional speaker. So I'm on stages, or pre-COVID, I used to be on stages all over. Now I stare at the green light a lot. As you'll know, if you follow me on Instagram, my stories. In fact, I'll give another example connected to that. So when I'm speaking, I do my best to rein in the pirate language, because I'm like, yeah. my authentic self would be to drop F-bombs left, right, center. But like when I'm doing, like, for example, keynotes with like bank executives from like global financial institutions, I'm like, you're not going to want to hear my F-bomb. So I'll adapt. It'll serves me. You'll like me. You'll hire me again. It serves you. It's a willing choice. I'm good to do it.
Right.
Or for example, Stu, I should tell you, right now, you don't know this. I'm like party on the top, everyone. Like I have like a respectable outfit on the top, but if you could see what I was wearing underneath, you'd be like, what in the actual F? Like I, the leggings are clashing with my mustard yellow shirt. I got Birkenstocks on. I got sports socks on. Yeah. When I'm done this, I'm going to go back and put the hoodie on. Like, I don't care. Like, and I post my ridiculous podcast and keynoting webinar outfits on Instagram stories all the time. That's and I'm adapting, right? Like before I got on, I put this yellow like duster on and lipstick on. I'm going to go take it off right away after.
Yeah.
Or for I'm like, guilty. Another example.
I'm adapting my outfit as well. I definitely am rocking sweats and some slippers under this.
Oh my gosh. See, and you're like party on the top. No one would know. One would know. See, look at that. Or for example, when I'm with my dad or my parents, I find that it's like, I'm really direct as a communicator, as you can possibly pick up. He's quite indirect. And I rein in my directness with him because I know that it will be hard for him to have me be so direct in moments. Yeah. And like culturally, it's like serves him. I'm good to do it. Now, here's what's important. The difference between the adapted self and the performing self. And I love the question you asked earlier. How do you know you're performing? Is that adapting feels fine because we're choosing to do it and it serves us and others.
Right.
But when we keep adapting and keep adapting and keep adapting, we get sucked into the performing self. And the performing self doesn't feel good because, again, whatever your signal is for anxiety, anxiousness, your body will tell you. So we want to just be careful that we're not adapting so much so that we get sucked into the authentic self. But the authentic self, last thing I'll say really quickly, is that when we dig deep and explore it, we realize, wow, we have more autonomy, choice and control, agency over how we behave than we thought we did. And for situations where we don't feel safe or comfortable or we're exhausted to be our authentic self at times, the adapted self is a great place to stay. And so, for example, sometimes I, as a chatty human being, when I don't feel like being chatty in a situation, I will just silently sit. Adapt itself and just be like, rein in my energy, adapt for the situation because I don't feel like talking. And that's okay too. We don't always have to be revealing our full blown authenticity if we don't want to.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a beautiful moment to reflect as well. Like, just what's an area where you can be a little bit more authentic, right? And like you said, it's those micro actions that lead to really being authentic. But it's like, if you can start with, what's one thing I can do today in one area of my life where I can push from being in performing to more authentic and maybe adapting a little bit? I think if people just continue to follow that, it's a beautiful way that they can start to live so much more authentically. And so, Ritu, it has been so much fun to dive through your life and you have so much wisdom. I massively really do appreciate you just sharing all of you today. And I'm curious for our listener, if they want to hang out with you more, get to know you. I know you have another book coming out real soon. Where's the best place for them to find you and just hang out with you some more?
Oh, I love that. Thank you, Stu. And thank you so much on so many fronts. More on that in a moment. So first of all, connect in with me on Instagram for sure. I love getting messages, DMs on Instagram, LinkedIn as well. But also I have so many tips and tools and strategies and more on my empowerment site, RithuBasine.com. You can check that out. My book, We've Got This, Unlocking the Beauty of Belonging, June 2023. So excited for it to come out. Check it out. Then thank you, Stu. It's been great to chat with you. Like, really thoroughly enjoyed our conversation today.
Me too. Sorry, I just punched the mic. I got so excited. but absolutely, it's been such a joy. I really, really do appreciate it. And I do have one last question for you, actually. And it's a question we ask all of our guests because we want to help our listener find direction, but we believe in doing it through action. So my last question to you would be, what's one thing our listener can do in the next 24 to 48 hours to start finding more direction in their life?
I'm going to go back to something I said earlier, which is the following. Pick one thing about yourself that you have not been sharing with others, or you have been holding back on, or something about your appearance that you've been thinking about wanting to do that you haven't done, or something you wanted to say. One thing about yourself that you have not been revealing, you've been holding back on because you're afraid of putting out there, and do it. And do it to one person. Do it to one person. Start there.
I love it. Amazing. Well, Ritu, thank you again so much for being here. It's been an absolute joy, and I am looking forward to sharing this with the world.
Thank you so much, Stu. Have me back.
Absolutely.
Congratulations, my friend, on crushing it through another episode here on Finding Direction. Make sure you give yourself a pat on the back, a round of applause, because you are one of the few who is not willing to settle for less than a life that lights up your soul, and that is absolutely something worth celebrating. I hope you got some nuggets there from Ritu. I hope you take some of the nuggets and apply them so you can start living more authentically. And if you enjoyed this show, make sure you hit that subscribe button, share it with a friend, and I promise when you send it to a friend, they're going to come back and say, thank you for sharing that one. It made an impact on my life. So thank you, my friend, for being here. I appreciate you. I am grateful for you. And if you want to stick around for another episode, don't feel like you need to go anywhere. I have another episode coming up right after this, and you are more than welcome to join me there. Until next time, my friend, I'll talk to you soon.